In today's episode, we're going to be talking about innovation and human-centered design. From Engagement, I'm David Millay, and this is Flip the Switch. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Flip the Switch, where we sit down with leaders in customer experience and employee experience, and we try to figure out what are the trends that they're paying attention to? What are the experiments that they're running? What are the principles that have helped guide their careers to success? Then we unpack all those insights and we apply them to the world of sports and entertainment, hospitality, live events, service, your organization. Now, today we are sitting down with Stephen King, and Stephen is an associate professor at the UNC School of Media and Journalism, and he's a former editor of innovations and former director of video at the Washington Post. We wanted to have Stephen on the show because he runs a group called Blue Sky Innovation Lab at UNC, where they study emerging technologies and help organizations apply those emerging tech pieces to their organization. So he is running all kinds of cool experiments and tests with sports teams and other organizations. There's a football team down in Atlanta that they've done some work with. And really, we are going to get into a lot of trends and emerging tech, especially in the worlds of AR and VR, and how that can impact your driveway-to-driveway experience for your customers. We are also going to talk a lot about how Stephen and his team actually run brainstorms so that you can run a better brainstorm with your own team. So we are going to talk a lot about human design principles. And if you're not familiar with what that is, this could be a good episode for you, because we're going to really go down to the basics of talking about what is human-centered design and what are those tools that you can start to apply in your everyday decision-making to ultimately make your employee experience and your customer experience better. So without further ado, let's jump into this episode with Stephen King. Stephen, what's going on? Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
All right. We are going to get into a ton of things all around innovation and creativity and a certain way of thinking. But before we do that, I do want to hit on your experience prior to UNC, where you worked at the Washington Post and you were the head of innovation and video. So talk to us maybe about some of the projects that you worked on there. Maybe we just hit like your favorite project or favorite two projects that you worked on while you were there, so you can give people an idea of what you were up to.
Yeah, I was at thewashingtonpost.com when it was a great time of trying to innovate and find new ways of telling stories online, kind of the early days of online news, and part of also with the merger with the print edition. But when I was running the innovations team inside the newsroom, one of the things that we came up with was a thing called time space, and it sounds pretty easy now, but what we did was we cataloged 10,000 media items coming from around the world, where we geotagged them, we put them on a timeline and map interface. And then we sold that as a sponsorship, and Sprint was the main sponsor at the time. And it was really successful for the Washington Post because it was successful for our users and it was successful for the advertiser. So it was one of those times of really getting engaged with what does the sponsor really want and what's a good product to put with them that's also great for our users.
Which is huge for a lot of our listeners that are in the sports space dealing with partnerships. And a lot of times that is not the approach. The approach is, well, what inventory do we have and how can we sell that to anybody that'll buy it? As opposed to saying, let's really get to understand the needs of our sponsors and start to figure that out and create a symbiotic relationship, which is kind of what it sounds like you guys were doing.
Yeah, we were then. And that's really kind of how we think about things in the lab and some of our clients. I think the idea of the signage sponsorship alone is kind of over. You really have to have an engaging sponsorship. You have to have something that connects who the sponsor is and what they're about, along with who the audience is, what they're about, and what that team is about. And so, you know, our lab is sponsored by Lenovo. Well, why is that? Well, we're a high-tech lab. We're doing really cool things. We leverage their technology. We actually value their technology. And so it's a really great partnership because they do great things. We do great things. We work together, and it's a good sponsorship.
Well, and it sounds like we're kind of getting into this human-centered design, which is what you guys focus on a lot in the lab. So sounds fairly self-explanatory, but I know it's a lot more complex behind the scenes than that. So for those who are unfamiliar with human-centered design, how would you describe the methodology?
Yeah. If you've ever heard of design thinking, and it's a framework of design thinking. So human-centered design, and when we work with clients, we might be doing, when we're working with Marriott, it's guest-centered design. And when we're working with sports team, it's fan-centered design. And it's really that throughout the entire process, from ideation to prototyping to launch to post follow-ups, it's all about finding that fan, finding that user, and knowing what they need in that moment and getting their feedback through the entire process.
So there's tons of strategies underneath human-centered design. Just off the top of your head, like, what are a few of those strategies that y'all use often? I know there are a lot of strategies under the sun, but you've probably got your version of greatest hits, if you will.
Yeah.
So what are some of those tried and true human-centered design thinking strategies that you employ? Yeah.
So we do survey data. We do a lot of things around user-focused things. The one I think is the most valuable is when we get to the super fan. We find opportunities to talk to the people who are most connected with that team or with that organization, whoever we're working with. And we go directly to them and we ask them really open-ended questions. And that gives us a chance to really understand who they are. We also take our designers and our developers on site for those things. So it's not done by, the customer rep. These things are done by the people building the experience. And so I think we see great value in getting that feedback to hear it and to see it and to witness it, to witness someone hit a button that's not working right and because they thought it was going somewhere else. When you see that, I have to fix it, and you see ways that you can fix it in a better way.
Let's put it into perspective of a recent project that you've worked on, because I think when you say we ask an open-ended question, that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So give us an example of a past project where you've used that strategy.
Yeah. So we were working in Atlanta there at the big stadium there. And one of the things, we went and talked with some super fans. And when we were talking with the executives, they would all say, we have the best Wi-Fi in the league. And that may be true. They thought they had great Wi-Fi. But every single time we talked with a fan, they said, the Wi-Fi stinks, or they said some form of that. And so we were picking up on that. And we were like, well, what's really going on? Well, it may be the Wi-Fi stinks. It may not be. But their perception is that it does. And so we knew we had to either deal with that and fix it, or we had to build around it. And so those are some of the things that, you hear it one way and it sounds great until you actually get on there and test it and hear it from fans. We knew we needed to do something different.
But what was the question that you asked to get to that point?
I don't remember that one specifically, but if I were just kind of off the top of my head, what I would say is, how do you use your device in the game? Okay. Or do you use your device in the game? And then I'd say, how do you use your device? Why do you use it? What are you using it for? Does that work well? Yeah. What are some of the frustrations? And so it's kind of a follow-up thing. The other tactic we use is five whys. So maybe we can do this with you, David, real quick.
Yeah, let's
do it. So David, do you work out?
I do.
Why do you work out?
For me, it's around longevity. So I know that when I want to be 100, there are certain exercises and things that I want to be able to do with my great-grandchildren, like bending down and picking them up in the front, walking into a pool while carrying a kid, getting down, getting back up. So for me, it's not about like strength and big exercise, like competition. It's more around longevity.
And so why do you want to live for a long time?
That's a great question. I think for me, it is about things that I want to accomplish in my life. And I know that there's only so much time and I'm not always the quickest to like execute on things. I'm like, I need a couple extra years to do those things.
Okay. Well, why do you think you need it more extra years more than somebody else?
I don't know. I think for me, I just have a lot of big ideas and I tend to get a lot of fulfillment from seeing those ideas come to fruition. And it's not enough for me to just have them written down. I actually want to see them come to life.
Cool. So I totally sprung that on you and I appreciate you being really honest in that. As we asked why, we learned more and more about who you are, right? I know that you care about family. I learned that you care about execution and getting things done and you want to have purpose. And so I learned those things about you, and we can do the same thing about a product or whatever.
Yeah, no, five whys is awesome. It is something that I have seen with sports teams where way too often we hit that surface level question and then we stop because we're like, we kind of heard what we wanted to hear or what we expected to hear. And so we can move on because they either reinforced our decision or I really don't want to go that much deeper into what they have to say there because it might mean more work for me, or it might mean that I've come up against this before and I know leaders are already going to shut that down. Yeah. Right. And so five whys is huge.
Yeah. Let me give you another example of human-centered design. We were working with Marriott, and they had contracted us to build an augmented reality experience for a very specific purpose. And so our team was working in the lab, and it's actually a student-based team, all undergraduate and graduate students. And so they go out and they started testing their AR app that they had built. And they came back and they're like, this is really a bad user experience. AR is not the thing for this. And they said, we think a chatbot would actually do better at doing what they're trying to accomplish. I said, all right, go build a chat. Let's build a prototype of a chatbot and let's do it. Well, now all of a sudden we have a contract that says we have to build an AR app. And we're going to a major corporate organization who has a contract with another bureaucracy. And we're trying to say, we're not going to build an AR app because it's bad user experience. And we need to build this totally different thing. Well, we made the pitch. They totally understood our process. They understood what we were doing and how we showed them evidence of why it was a bad experience and why this one was better. And they went for it. And we made a small change on the contract and made it work and moved forward.
And yeah, so the principle there from the human-centered design is like actually going out and testing it before you invest a whole ton of dollars to it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got students we'll have them go out and test projects on the street when we know another sporting event's coming up. So for example, we're working on something that we're going to be pitching to the Carolina Panthers that we're working on. That's a student-based team. Well, we can't get to Charlotte tomorrow, but guess what? There is going to be a home game at UNC. And so we're able to go into their arena, basically rebuild it in a UNC environment for something that we're going to pitch for the NFL later on.
All right. You can't just throw that out there and then gloss over it. Can we talk about that anymore? Feel free to be like, we can't talk about that project yet. But if you can, go for it.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you really the problems we're trying to solve is how do we engage with the fan during the game, right? What are the things that they need at every moment in the game? So as we walk through the process, we look at stuff from when you leave your house to when you get home and everything in the middle. Okay. So the first quarter is very different than the fourth quarter. And so we're constantly trying to figure that out. So in our experience, one of the things we've seen is some poor use cases of the QR code, horrible user experience, right? You got to zoom in and all this stuff, and they're just putting on the Jumbotron and everyone's trying to do this with the phone. It's a bad user experience. So we have a technological solution that will fix that, right? It will help us to help solve that problem for teams and engage them more and more throughout the process.
Interesting. All right. We got to get one. Maybe I don't want to go in too much into the QR codes. I feel like QR codes made a comeback, didn't they? Did they not make a comeback during the pandemic?
They absolutely did make a comeback because of necessity during the pandemic, but it still doesn't mean it's the best user experience. So we think there are better ways that we can get you the content faster with less kind of holdups. And so that's what we're doing. Cut as much friction out of the process as possible.
We're just going to go all over the place. You're giving me like nice, clear, concise answers. So we're going to just jump here. All right. So how do you guys balance something like let's use QR codes, right? So that is a technology that most people are familiar with. It exists. It might not be the smoothest thing, but it exists and we know it's there versus some type of new innovative solution like you guys are probably working on. How do you guys combat that? Because I know a lot of people in organizations right now are constantly balancing this. Well, there's friction in the change itself moving towards this new thing. So how do you help people get over that hump?
Yeah. So I think it's one of those balances, right? Like the balance of, was someone willing to try it? If they're going to try something new, the payoff better be really good. Okay.
Like exponentially better.
Exactly. Right. You've got to make it worth it for me to risk my time or to risk me looking stupid as a user so that I'm willing to step up and do that, right? I mean, think about VR. You're going to put a box on somebody's face, okay? Why would they ever do that unless there's something really good on the other side of that box, right? And so that's why I think, Will or we can argue if VR is going to take off or not. But I really think that like the value is that it has to be exponentially better. So as we look at user experience, people know the QR code or whatever. Maybe there's a little bit more friction for people to learn this new system. But if we can get this new system implemented, then that makes life easier for everyone. And that might be more personalization. It might be a better experience and like of you engaging in another way, but it's got to be something valuable.
I'm going to go off on a slight tangent because I think this is a bigger concept that everybody should be applying to a lot of different areas and any kind of change management or innovation process in your organization, where a lot of times when we are advising or consulting with teams as well, I mean, we see this too. One of the things that constantly gets brought up is like people want a better fan fest, their venue, right? And they think that a couple extra, an extra $100,000 where they can do some more pop-ups and face paints, that's going to do it. And we're like, look, if you're going to get people to change from their tailgating experience at their own car that they really enjoy, that fan fest has to be exponentially better than the tailgate. And face painting is not going to do it. Right.
Right.
And so that's, mm-hmm. that's where like Texas is one of our clients. And you can see that they took this and put it into practice. That experience is exponentially better than tailgating. And yeah. I think a lot of other teams, you know, they're not willing to invest to make it exponentially better. And that's the challenge.
Yeah. So let me give you an example that we were working with. We were working with yeah. one of the conferences that came to us, and they had some retail space that they were really interested in kind of turning into a store. And mm-hmm. so we started asking the questions, and yeah, what do you want? Because they were coming to us saying, we want something that brings people to the store.
Yeah.
Like, okay, great. Well, how do we bring people to the store? We started brainstorming to that. But again, we go deeper and deeper and deeper. And ultimately we realize like, this is a bad move, right? I really don't think anyone's going to come to the store. It's too far from the venues, bad parking. There's all these logistic problems, right? So let's get to the essence. What are you trying to do? Well, we're trying to leverage the space we have. Oh, so you have space. Okay, well, that's what you got. So you have an asset. What do we do with that asset? Okay, well, who's your target? And so then we took the asset, we took their target audience and their main goals. We put all that together and we came up with a really cool sports engaging concept that people might travel and pay money to go see, not to buy merchandise, but to be a part of it, right? And it's built into the whole essence of who they are as an organization, as well as what their goals and who they're targeting.
Yeah. So a lot of this is taking a step back first to your core user. What are their needs, goals, motivations, stereotypes, all those things. And then it's going into your five whys and saying why.
Exactly. Well, what's funny is we spent 20 minutes going down the retail path to ultimately yeah. like realize that we all came to the same conclusion, like this is probably not the right way, you know? And will they actually invest in the idea that we came up with? Because it's a whole lot more expensive than building a store, you know? Will they do it? Who knows, right?
Yeah. Fascinating. Well, something that you hit on earlier that I want to get back to, you said you're spending a decent amount of time thinking about that in-game experience and maybe even the at-home viewing experience. So maybe let's talk about that. I mean, how should brands think about leveraging emerging technologies as it relates to the in-game experience?
Yeah. So every single venue experience, they're competing with the at-home TV experience, right? And at the college level, the professional level. That is a hard thing to do. The statistics are real time. The commentary is strong. It helps. You know, there's replays, there's all these things that you're competing with. And so are there ways that we can leverage emerging technologies like augmented reality or just access to things on your phone or stuff in the stadium to help increase and build up that experience? The key thing is we can't take away from that in-game experience that people paid for, right? So
yeah,
it's gotta be a both and, right? You gotta add on to it without distracting from it. And so that's really the hard thing. If everyone's looking at their phones while they're trying to watch the game, well, that's not what they did. They could do that at home, right? So why would they pay for those seats? And so we've really got to find ways to bridge technology in a way that gives them those add-ons that they want without distracting from the in-game experience.
Give us a few examples, whether projects that you've worked on or projects that you've seen, where you feel like a brand, a venue, a team is using emerging technologies to amplify the in-game or in-event experience?
Question. So I'll go back to Atlanta. I think that was one where we were trying to bring people back out of the clubs after halftime, right? So you've got a situation where they go to these wonderful clubs, great big screens, and they're having a good time. And so halftime's over and they just may not make it back to their seats because the experience in the corridor and in the concourse is a really great experience.
Yeah.
So what could we do? Well, that was about really like building from the essence of it, right? Like the halftime show has to have a story. It has to have a narrative arc and it needs to build up so that people know both visually and audio wise that it's getting to the end of the show. So the production team in Atlanta, they are amazing. They do amazing work and understand the value of story and visuals together. And so we worked with them to build out an augmented reality experience that was kind of the pinnacle of the end of the halftime show. And so we gave a unique experience to each person. So they were able to engage with their phone. Each person in the stands, so 64,000 people, can all have a unique mm-hmm. augmented reality experience that didn't detract from the game, but it engaged them in a new way to get them back ready for the kickoff of the game.
And I think that is one of the things I enjoy about AR personally, is that I think it does do a lot more of the augmenting the experience versus recreating. And maybe, you know, we're going to talk about at-home viewing experience, and maybe that's where VR comes in a little bit more. But that example of AR is great because you couldn't have experienced that really cool thing that you were going to see on Twitter all the next day unless you left the suite and went out into the venue to do it. And you're already in your seat, so maybe you'll just stay for the third quarter, you know?
Yeah, it's exactly right. And I think the augmented reality experience of the future is really dependent on the devices getting small and being something that you want to put on because the experience is that much better. And it's unobtrusive. It doesn't block my view of the game, but it enhances and gives me same like lower third graphics of a broadcast. It's giving me lower third graphics in game.
Fascinating. How about some others? Do you have any other examples that maybe are not, I'll stall for you while you think of something, but one of the ones that I always thought was really cool, this was back in the day, Rob Heineman and the guys at Sporting KC first did this, where it was just literally like things that were geofenced that were coupons basically throughout the venue, right? So you got Budweiser's a sponsor, you're walking around, you get near the Budweiser bar, you get pushed to your app a Budweiser coupon, right? For 50% off, or I mean, probably not that much, but 10% off, buy one, get one free of your beer, whatever it is. And so there are things like that, that to me, those are kind of emerging technologies that do augment the experience, if you will, or they make the in-game experience better. Do you have any other ones that you really like?
Well, I was going to show you, this is a kind of a future version of one of these headsets. They're getting much smaller than what you have like with the HoloLens, which is like the huge, you know, kind of a huge visor.
So real quick, if you are listening on the podcast and just the audio version and you're not watching the video version on YouTube, go check it out, because these, I've never seen headsets like that before. They're crazy.
Yeah. So key piece to this is that this one actually is defunct, and the company that's made it wasn't able to keep it up, but we're there. We're getting there, right? And the key thing is they didn't try to do more than necessary. The HoloLens is trying to do a lot of things. This one's only about display. There's no interaction in things. So what I'm able to do is move my head and watch the game and do it, but I'll be able to get those graphics and things like I get in a broadcast, right? And so I think that's one that could be really interesting in the future as we see the devices get better that are specific for particular uses like sports. And then that's something you'll be able to check out at a game. And then, you know, maybe that comes with your VIP seats, you know, something like that.
That's an interesting use case, because that's what I was going to say. I'm like, are people just bringing in their headsets, or that's a great way to do it. Hey, you're sitting in these sections, you get to check these out or whatever it might be.
Yeah. One of the things we always do is we look at the past to predict the future, right? So look at what NASCAR did with Sprint and Nextel when they were kind of doing that idea of the headsets to listen to the crews, right? To listen to the racer and the crew chief. You know, they basically let you check them out, right? And so they had an expensive upfront capital cost. They did that. They let you rent that. And then ultimately now everybody has that on their phone. But the first steps of that was a device that was capitalized from another company, right? And I think you're going to see the same kind of thing.
I love it. Now, we spend a lot of time advising college athletic departments and working hand in hand with them to improve customer experience. And one of the things that we often hear when we're pushing innovative things is that our fan base is older, and a lot of them, when they come to a game, they just want to unplug and escape from reality, right? So in your mind, I mean, how much are there data or trends on how much people want to be on their phones or plugged in versus how much a live event is kind of an escape from the everyday?
Yeah, I think it's really back to what we were talking about before, is that it has to be an experience that's so valuable for them that they're going to want to do it. And they're going to want to do that, to like add that device. So, you know, if you think about some of these college basketball games where you have the lights app, that is a novelty app. It has very little value outside of the stadium, but because you get to participate and be a part of everybody else, all these people, probably 2/3 of the stadium, pulls out that they've installed that app. Well, what's the value of that, right? To the user, I think very little, right? To the advertiser, whoever sponsored it, they're getting data, right? And that's what they're doing. Sure. They're paying for the data, right? But what we want to do is, if we want someone to use that app past the lights, right, to use it during the game or engage them, then we better have something really good that engages them to do that. Now, we know, I know in Atlanta exactly the age of the season ticket holder, right? That's a really important number to know. And you need to talk to them and figure out what they're willing to do and not do. But sometimes you can push them to do something they might have said they wouldn't do because the experience is so good, right? For example, I think, if you want someone to install the app, giving them in-seat ordering where the food comes to them, especially in a sporting event that doesn't stop very much, then all of a sudden you have a value add that's worth adding your technology to, right? Like there's got to be something there.
I love that. That mindset is big. Of if you're going to get somebody to change, if you're going to get somebody to adopt a new mindset, it's got to be exponentially better, I promise, on the other end of it. Well, let's maybe talk a little bit about the at-home viewing experience. How can brands or sports teams, how can they reach these fans, especially ones that might never make it to an actual event in the stadium? How can they reach fans at home with emerging technologies?
Yeah. So I love what people are trying with virtual reality. I think virtual has a very immersive technology. It makes you feel like you're there. But I'm also discouraged by kind of what the NBA has seen with that. If you think about they've got these kind of three camera views and people are able to put on a headset and be like courtside or under the goal. What they're not seeing is like major repeat usage, right? People aren't buying it season to season. They're not seeing like every home game they got to be in the headset. They're still choosing television.
Interesting. Right?
So what that means is that game experience in the headset is not as good as the TV experience, right? And so if you're going to build a product and you're going to be able to do that, you've got to make it, you've got to do something. So there's a serious work there. I think they've made a lot of great strides and they're doing things. It's just not as good as what we've spent the last 60 years figuring out in television.
What would be an idea, like if you were running the show and you had full autonomy over it? I mean, what might be something that you would try, right? Not saying that it's going to work, but what would be something that you would try in that space?
So you remember when the XFL was out and they had cameras all over the field?
Oh yeah.
People doing it. I mean, I think ultimately if you're going to have that at-home experience in a headset, you got to be close. You got to be like getting spit on, And so I think you got to be able to get with a league and some kind of opportunity to get totally engaged there, right? Would I pay to be that close to the head coach on the sidelines of a football game? That might actually be worth it. Or maybe it's a secondary viewing. I watched it on TV and then now I get to go see the highlights of that at home in my headset,
Or, I'm trying to think. Yeah. If it's like a minute delay, could you be in the huddle or something like, yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Something that you're not affecting the game, right? You're not going to change it, but yet you have an insight that others don't have. And the NFL has figured out ways to do that. The scoreboard can't show the mouth of the quarterback when he's calling it out and things like that. So we can find solutions around that if that's a goal of what the organization is trying to do. When I think about the future of AR, we talk about like these thin glasses. If it's something that I can put on while I'm watching TV, then now all of a sudden I can have all kinds of contextual information coming to me live as the event's going on. That could be a really interesting situation, right? I've got my TV, I've got my replays and all of that, but then I've got my fantasy sports or those who are in sports betting, all of those things are coming to them live and it's customized and personalized for what they care about.
So talk to me about this a little bit. I mean, when we think about the core principles of fandom, right? Self-affirmation, group affiliation, how can brands leverage technology to make like more fully immersive viewing experiences from the living room? I mean, we talked about being in a huddle or different views, that sort of thing. I mean, you just kind of alluded to it and hit on it a little bit with having your fantasy sports there. But are there other ways that we can make that experience more fully immersive? Because again, if I'm going to go from the comfort of just being able to switch on the TV to now I got to wear a headset and things, what is it going to make me, it better be really freaking immersive for me to make that switch and put on a headset?
Yeah, I don't know that we're there yet with the current headsets. I haven't seen the experience that's going to do that. What I have seen and what I think the future is going to be is imagine away games where instead of you watching at home by yourself or with a few friends, you're watching away games with 700 people or 1500 people at these small venues. And these small venues have multiple cameras that might have the like super wide, get you in the huddle scene. It also has the feeling and the sound and huge sound going on. So you feel like you're at the stadium and you're with people and you're engaging and that screen fully immerses you. I think you're going to see these kind of mini venues popping up across the country that are going to give fans a chance to engage when the team's away. And so now all of a sudden, now we have new opportunities for sponsorship and fan engagement because we've now just added 7 more games to the schedule.
Now my head goes into entrepreneur mode around like business side. Are those owned by the teams? Are those owned by a third party that then partners with the team? I mean, who knows?
Yeah, there's a company that actually has just made some major, I can't remember the name off the top of my head. I don't want to call the wrong one. But yeah, there's a company that has kind of pushing in this direction and making strides to kind of to get there.
It's like a way better sports bar.
Yeah, exactly. And it's only temporary, right? It's only for that game when it's away. And so it's kind of these like pop-up 500 to 1500 people in venues.
Love it. All right. Well, let's talk some more about some of the projects that you guys have worked on. We've talked about the Atlanta project a number of times here. Let's go into just really this is kind of around change management and innovation. I think a lot of times Katie and I are going through some different strategic plans right now. And a lot of the stuff that we see is pretty vague. But I know from lots of experience doing a lot of these change management initiatives, you got to have no vagueness when you're going through an innovation or creativity process. And actually, constraints help you become more creative. So when you guys are going through a project, talk to us about some of the steps involved. Like, how do you, I know you probably start with what does success look like? So talk to us about how you define success when you're going into a project.
Well, one thing I think when I talk and work with executives across multiple industries, that digital change management is a huge thing, right? Like being able to bring in a new version, especially when you're not a technical company and you're moving that direction. So what are the things we talk to them about? First of all, is it's got to be owned at the top, right? We need everyone at the top, all the VPs, senior VPs, executive VPs, they all have got to be on board for this. I think that's a really key thing. And then it has to filter down. That your team has to know that this is a priority. Yeah. The second piece to that is that you have to listen at the top, the middle, the bottom. Everybody on the org structure has to listen to those above them and those below them. And listening is active listening. It's about gaining insight from listening, not just thank you for sharing, have a good day. It's okay, thank you for sharing. Can I follow up on this or can I share that with my team? Yeah. And then you've actually got an insight that you can act on, right? And so that can be internal, like, one of my employees says, like, Steven, you're insensitive and you're not paying attention to what we're doing here. And then I need to listen, understand, and deal with that. Right.
Yeah.
But that can also be from, you know, 12 fans actually said they couldn't connect today. Okay. Why could they not connect? Well, maybe it was just devices, but oh, guess what? Somebody pushed an update on Android version, whatever. And all of a sudden we didn't know it. And so now we got to deal with that. Well, 12 people was enough that we said, oh, we actually had a bigger problem than we realized. Okay. Let's get that fix put in. You know, so change management has to do with good communication from the top down and listening.
Yeah. I think when we think about defining success and something that you hit on around senior leadership all being aligned and just saying that it is a priority in my mind, right, is not good enough. Like you got to go a lot deeper of like, it's a priority and here's where it stacks in our priority list. And here's what the involvement level actually is going to mean by you saying it's a priority. It's a priority to some leaders means I check in on it once a month. It's a priority to other leaders means it is my focus when I wake up in the morning that we're going to make movement on this project every day for the next month. Yeah. Very different. It's a priority for us.
Yeah. One time we were going through our human-centered design process and we basically took over a conference room and we started talking to the employees in the company. And all of a sudden, man, they are like walls. They're not telling us anything or whatever. And what I found out was they all thought we were here to decide who was getting laid off. Jeez. And that was the exact opposite of what we were doing. And management was bringing us in to help them solve their culture issues. And they were like part of the culture issue, you know? And so one of the things we had to do was like, hey guys, I need you to come. I need you to talk to us and like talk to your team and explain that like what our purpose here. It didn't matter. It was too late, right? It was just lip service at that point, it felt like, right? It was so one of the things that, you know, you've got to be able to do is to like communicate in ways that are not just a big speech to the big organization, right? You know, one of the things that we've had here that's been really exciting is we bring senior leaders here to the lab to let them see what we can do. So Arthur Blank, owner of the Atlanta Falcons, is coming into our lab. He sees what we do. And then his team is excited because Arthur was excited. Now I'm excited. And then now all of a sudden the rest of the organization is seeing what we're doing and that this matters and that we're all committed, right? That's a big deal, right?
Yeah.
So
it definitely, if you're going through this and you're listening and you've got a project that you want to work on, whether it's with innovation or basically doing something new, like go get your senior leader involved as soon as possible, because I know you got a bunch of other things that you're working on. You're trying to get that senior leader's attention. If you don't get your senior leader's attention early on the project, it's just going to sit there. And that is the reality. Go ahead.
Yeah. And sadly, we actually have started a new thing when we're working with clients. It's like, we can't be your pet project, right? Yeah. If we're just a pet project, you're not going to be successful. We're not going to be successful. And so we really work hard to make sure that if we're going to do a really big augmented VR whatever that technology is, it's got to be engaging in the organization all the way.
Huge, huge. All right. Let's say an organization has said, this is not just a pet project for us. We really want to get more innovative in XYZ area. What are some of the challenges? Let me back up. One, do you feel like most people are coming to you and saying, we want to get more innovative, or do they have a specific challenge that they want you guys to help them ideate around?
Yeah. A lot of our clients come to us as they hear me speak, or they find out something that we're working on, like, ooh, I want that from our organization. Mm. And we start there and we say, sure, we'll be happy to build you an augmented reality app or a virtual reality experience, whatever that is. Sure. And that's where we start. But ultimately, what we really do through our process is figure out, well, what are your goals? What are you trying to do? Who's the audience? Mm. And then we back up, and it may not actually be an augmented reality experience, right? And so I think the early thing for us is that we get you together with our design team, our developers, and we actually work through a process to decide what it is. You know, when we're rushed, when it's like, hey, I have a deadline and it's in 3 months, well, that's going to be really hard for us to get truly what needs to really happen versus what your sponsor was willing to pay for, right? Which, and so we really, we're not as much as one to just do what a sponsor is willing to pay for. We really want to say, what is a good fan experience? And now what's a good sponsor that goes with that?
We're the same way on that. We're kindred spirits in the way that we approach that world. Well, what are some of the actual questions that you're asking an organization to think about in an ideation session? Mm-hmm. So you're working it. You're trying to figure out, are we really hitting the core user? What are some of those initial questions, like the actual questions themselves? We talked about the five whys. What are some questions that you can ask in a brainstorming session to really get to the core of what you're trying to do?
Yeah. So one of the things is I do is I meet with the executives outside of that first, and I actually decide if they're going to be a part of the brainstorming session or not. Sometimes we leave them out and sometimes we bring them in. It kind of depends on the organization and how healthy it is and how they are.
Yeah. I was going to say, what impact does that have if they're in the room versus not in the room?
Yeah. So if the boss is in the room, sometimes it limits creativity. People aren't willing to try new ideas, or if that boss, everything they say is just has to happen. And so all of a sudden, every idea, the only good ones are the ones that are coming from that person.
Yeah.
And so we really, I've oftentimes just said, I want you to sit the morning out and you come join us in the afternoon and you hear the pitches, right? And so we've at least had the morning to have, new and fresh ideas. The other thing I do is I ask them to identify the audience, okay? And then I go to the team and ask them to identify the audience. Okay. And then I actually say, well, guess what? Your boss said this. Is he right or wrong? Or she right or wrong?
Yeah.
And we kind of go through that. And then we actually get to, okay, well, your data says this, And so let's see where we are. So we first start with identify the audience. Yeah. In those brainstorming sessions, we know that people learn and share in different ways. They think in different ways. Some people like to be quiet. Mm-hmm. They like to think on their own and be contemplative. And some people like me are very outgoing and outspoken. And I have an idea and I write it down. And I go to the next one. I go to the next one. I'm louder than anybody else in the room. And that's, we want to balance both of those things. And so we do different exercises that will actually, the two people are forced to work in both ways, ways that they are comfortable and ways that they are uncomfortable. And we work through that. And then we have ways of finding what's a good idea and a bad idea. Because this idea that no idea is a bad idea. Well, there's a lot of bad ideas out there.
There are bad ideas, yes.
Yeah. Most of them came from your management, remember? Because you're always complaining about your boss's bad idea. So they are out there. What we want to do is focus and stay focused on what are the good ones. Find the diamond in the rough, right? And bring those out. We use different human-centered design exercises to do that.
I was going to say, if you are listening to this and it is your first time hearing about human design or human-centered design or design thinking, I would encourage you to go check out some different resources to at least get familiar with it, because there are a lot of things that are just going to help you run meetings better. I mean, I've sat in too many Zoom meetings where we're like, all right, we're going to have a brainstorm about how to make you know, game day better. Let's use that example. Or let's have a brainstorm on how to make the parking experience better. Let's go around the room. What ideas do you have? And that is a terrible way to brainstorm because of, Stephen, what you just hit on, where you have different styles of people. You have some people that are quiet. They've got a lot of great ideas, but they're quiet. And they're going to get overshadowed by the loud guy every time in a setting like that. So you've got to facilitate a brainstorm in a specific way that you can facilitate those ideas from everybody.
Yeah. One of the quick stories that I use for this is if I was at dinner one night and I was trying to watch what I was eating, and we were at this nice steakhouse and it was a large group, and I happened to order first, and I ordered a salad. The next person ordered a salad. The next person ordered a salad. I'm like, wait, there's no way that everybody wants a salad at this steakhouse, right? But they were all afraid because I was the boss, and they were like, well, if he ordered a salad, I must order a salad. So I stopped. I was like, tell the waiter, it's like, you know, I want to change my order. I really want the steak. I've changed my mind. Well, guess what? Now everybody's getting the steak and people are changing their orders. And so it just shows that, like, there's things about dynamics in groups that we have to deal with. And we want to basically take those distractions away and focus on the idea and the creativity that we can come up with.
A lot of times, too, I'm wondering if you get this pushback. A lot of times when we're facilitating and stuff like that, there are some more traditional leaders that'll be like, why is this so frou-frou? And like, what are you doing with all the post-it notes? And I don't want to break up into smaller groups. We just should just do everything together as a whole group. I'm like, that's not as effective. It's science.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we try to do ahead of time is to help that leader. We do a lot of work with the Army and military.
Okay, tell us.
And so, you know, one time we had a colonel in here who's leading his team, and that colonel was the loudest voice in the room and everything. And, you know, we talked ahead of time about why we do things. And, you know, one of the things that we, you know, if you'll notice this, if you're watching on the video, my ceiling is higher than it should be, right? It's 12, 14 foot ceiling.
Okay.
And because there's science that says that ideas come in bigger open spaces.
No way.
People are more creative. So we have, like, Stanford Design School says that, and we use those things. We give that evidence ahead of time of our process. Mm. And it helps that we have case studies and examples of being through this. But we try to have the conversation before the meeting so that it doesn't happen and they're not challenging you during the brainstorming.
Yeah.
But, you know, on occasion, we've had some of our more direct leaders that just think it was a waste of their time. And you know, we just have to kind of work through that in the moments.
When you are going through this kind of innovation ideation process with a client, who are some of the key players that are typically involved?
So one of the things I think is important is that we get people from all across the organization, as well as your target audience. So
In the room together at the same time?
Yes, we actually bring in fans, or we will bring in guests. Like with Marriott, we bring in guests to be a part of it early on, right from the beginning. And so one of the things Truist is doing in their innovation center in Charlotte, they have a research team that constantly has users there during working hours. They pay users to come in and actually be available for testing and for getting feedback and for just doing ideation sessions. And they're always running there, like a schedule of when you can access these users. And so I think that's a really important thing, is that they're early on. So we include users. Let's just do sports, for example. So we'll say we're going to have a sports people that we're going to try to get multiple demographics of fans. So we might have three fans represented in a 20 person group. We'll have three fans represented. We're going to have the event staff team that is, like, on the ground at the turnstiles, at the seats, whatever. We're going to have them. We're going to have probably food and beverage person there. We're going to have a few management people, but we're going to try to limit that, no more than one in every group. And then sometimes we'll ask them to, like, just not join a group.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to include the people who do the work, right? And so if it's, you know, the fan engagement team, it's the people who are throwing the t-shirts, it's the people who are running the Jumbotron scoreboard type stuff, it's the video production team. We're all going to be in there together. And we're going to share. We also bring in the sponsorship ad people, right? And so, like, you got to know if you can sell it or not, right? And they're going to have ideas that are very different than what the production team's going to have, right? And so we try to make that mix. I love it when a leader of an organization says, who do you want? And we basically give them a recipe of the type of people we want, and they build the roster and send them here. You know, that's really a great opportunity for us.
Huge. Now, one of the things that you just mentioned was you bring in the people that are actually doing it. So when we think about the execution process of, great, we walked out of the session, we've got some crystal clear ideas of where we want to go next, who are typically involved in that execution process? just depend on the project? Go ahead.
Yeah, it depends. We make sure that somebody is assigned a next step out of every meeting. So that's meetings in our own like lab among our own things, whatever. It doesn't have to be, you don't define the whole plan. You're not like, here's the 17 steps mm-hmm. it's going to take us to get to opening day, right? But it's, this is the next first step. And that person is like labeled and written down that like, this is my responsibility. And it's clear that they have to come back with some type of thing. And that decides what moves forward. So we make sure we're really tight on assigning those things.
When we're in a brainstorm session, a lot of times one of the things that we do is we have like essential roles within that group that is brainstorming, if you will, or even executing. So what are some of the essential roles or systems that people need to have internally to be able to go out and create a new idea and go execute on it?
Well, I'll give you one that's really like kind of big in my heart is okay. that we're in a tech company and it's typically dominated historically by men. And the women who are there are often expected to be the ones that take notes. Either they take that on themselves or it's just kind of an expectation. So we very intentionally rotate the note taker among everybody in the team. And I don't care if you got good handwriting or bad handwriting, that's why we got computers. You know, like someone's going to be taking notes, it'll be a different person. It's not always going to fall on the same person, right? And typically that has fallen on women. And so I think it's really important that we break up with those roles and those traditional kind of roles of what has always been so that people are not stuck doing one thing. So that's one. We also make sure that there's a facilitator who's a trained facilitator that knows how to kind of work a group when you get stuck, like how to get past, you know, you're arguing and, you know, you're stuck on something that may actually never see the light of day. We have a facilitator who knows how to ask the right question to get us past that.
Yeah, that person is very important. It's an art and a skill to be able to say, hey guys, we're not coming to a conclusion right now. We're going to flip this over to the decider and they're going to decide, or this is what we're going with, or squash it. I know you're making a great point. You're on your pulpit preaching about whatever the point it is, but
exactly.
We got to move on.
Right.
Well, what are some of the biggest misconceptions or opinions in this space that you just kind of flat out disagree with? And maybe that could be around towards human-centered design or emerging technologies.
I think the idea of you build it, they will come, like building audiences in any digital space, is it has to be focused on what do the users want. You know, you mentioned the tailgating experience, right? You're not going to bring someone away from something they've been doing for 20 years, right? And so what you got to do is find out what they really want and go to them. So I think that's one. Also that like human-centered design is limiting in itself, right? Because if we say we always have to have feedback, we have to be really careful that we don't just keep spinning our wheels and we have a failure to launch because we actually have gotten so much feedback, we can't actually work through it, right? So you still have to have decision points. You still have to have deadlines. You still have to have, you know, things that you're pushing towards. And actually in sports, it's a little bit easier because you got a game coming up and that schedule's not going to move. And so we know we got to hit preseason. We got to hit opening day. We got to hit the next home game, whatever it is. And so we're constantly moving. And that's stressful on your staff and a part. And we that's the only thing we learned working our first time with the NFL is like working on the NFL season is really stressful on the staff, but you got to hit those NFL deadlines.
Too. Well, obviously you are constantly staying up on emerging technologies. You're on helping teams come up with a lot of new emerging ideas that are catching headlines. So for you, what are some of your favorite sources for inspiration to learn about new trends or to stay up on new trends, whether that be in human design or human-centered design or AR, VR, AI?
You know, people ask me this all the time, like, how do I know what's coming?
Yeah.
I don't have a good answer. I wish I did. You know, it's one of those things that I find the things that are interesting to me and I'm constantly reading on the things that are interesting to me.
Where are you finding them? Where are you reading them?
A lot from my LinkedIn feed. So I'm following people in the AI VR space. I'm following people who are business leaders, right? Like business leaders is a big thing for me and for, you know, they're looking for these things. And so I'm following those things a lot on LinkedIn. I also tend to find things on Instagram, right? It seems funny, but like,
no, but I'm with
follow
you.
Certain accounts really put fun gadgets in front of you and you go down a rabbit trail and all of a sudden you saw something out of another country that you actually you've never seen before.
Yeah. Are there any accounts that come to your mind that you can recall just straight off your brain?
Innovators.city.
Innovators.city. That's on Instagram or LinkedIn?
Yeah, Instagram.
Okay.
You know, I follow Fortune Brainstorm Tech. That's one that the Fortune Brainstorm Tech team is really good. They host events that bring in the right people, and I learn a lot at those events.
Okay.
So I think those are good. And then, of course, like the big, you know, I'm always following TechCrunch and the big news of like what's happening at CES and those kinds of things. And I will say I have this little secret too, is we have a team of innovation fellows, and we actually have a research team. And so, you know, they kind of keep me up on like, what are the things that I need to be reading, and they give me briefs, and then I might dig in a little bit farther.
See, guys, what we just did there was an example of the five whys, right?
Yeah.
Right. We just kept digging.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Question. Yeah, you just let me keep talking, right? And I just kept talking until I told you the secret was the one that I don't want to tell anybody, you know?
Exactly. Oh, too funny. All right. Quick rapid fire round to bring us home here. I know you've got some books that you really love that have like kind of given you life and helped guide your career. So what is one book that you've given the most as a gift? And feel free to bring out a couple more and why.
Yeah. So the one I give as a gift, I think, is Free to Focus from Michael Hyatt. And that's because I'm a creative and I wasn't the detail-oriented person I needed to be the leader I needed to be. Mm. And that book just helped me to get focused and get focused on the things that matter. So that was good. You know, I'm a huge Disney fan, the idea of storytelling and experience and bringing this off. So I'd say Bob Iger's The Ride of a Lifetime is one of my favorites. He actually came to the lab and saw a lot of the stuff that we were doing. And so that was a really big moment for me, a big moment for our lab. And I'm a huge Bob Iger fan. I also read a lot of the kind of business biographies. And so here's one of my favorites is Shoe Dog. Has a lot of sports engagement there. The Phil Knight story, essentially. And what I love about it is, you know, you're wearing Nikes while you're reading the book and you're like, there's no way this company is going to make it. But the story is told in such a way that you feel that way. And so I think it really was just, it was just a really great read for, you know, that like entrepreneurship and sports and apparel.
I'm trying to get more. Yeah. One, Shoe Dog is great. Ride of a Lifetime is great. Have not read Free to Focus, which I need to add to my reading list. I'm reading Titan right now, which is John D. Rockefeller's biography. Okay. It is dense. It's like on Audible at like 1.8 speed. It's like 34 hours. I'm like, okay, I'll finish this sometime next year. I'll let you know how it goes when I have kids and we're 10 years down the road. All right. One more thing for us. What piece of advice would you leave our audience with as it comes to, you know, they're trying to create better customer experiences, better fan experiences. What would you leave them with?
Sometimes a visual is what's necessary to kick off the next idea to get your boss or your fan to understand what you're doing. Most of my success in my career has been about communicating the idea that I have. And so if you want to communicate an idea, it helps to have a visual. And so what I say is that visual can be very basic or it can be very complex depending on kind of where you're going with it. But those visuals help people to kickstart their imagination. And they see what you're talking about, and that you feel you have confirmation that your idea was communicated well in the visual. Then they understand it, and then now they can add on to that idea. And so I've seen so many great ideas build from a sketch on a legal pad or a post-it note that then got to the whiteboard that then actually got to a prototyping software. You know, and I think those visuals can be really helpful as you're communicating, even if you're just drawing stick figures.
Yeah. No, I think that's huge. And I think about that a lot. I've been thinking about that a lot lately for like just some of the concepts that we talk about around fandom or employee experience or customer experience. And like, we need more visuals to talk about this stuff because that really does help people. And for everybody that's listening to this, I mean, Stephen, to your point, just draw it out on a napkin. It doesn't have to be pretty, but a lot of times that can help people grasp what you're saying. Stephen, this has been awesome. Where can people reach you or follow along your journey and keep up with the projects that you're working on?
Yeah. So if you're on LinkedIn, that's probably the best way that I'm posting a lot of stuff there. So you can follow me. So Stephen King UNC is probably the best way to search that. UNC Blue Sky Innovations. So that's the lab. So uncbluesky.com is kind of the best way to kind of follow and see what we're doing.
Awesome. Stephen, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. And I'm really looking forward to the next conversation.
Great. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
To everybody listening, thanks so much. We'll see you next week. Hey guys, before you head out, just wanted to say thank you so much for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. That helps more of your peers find the show as they search for ways to get better in their own roles. But this podcast is just a small part of what we do at Engagement. In our normal day in the office, we're crazy focused on helping athletic departments and sports and entertainment companies generate more revenue by becoming more customer-centric. To see how we might be able to help your organization, visit engagementpartners.com to learn more. Download a free guide, check out our blogs and case studies, or schedule a call with us if you want to see how we can help with your particular objectives. Our goal is to help you create deeper connections with fans and generate more revenue. So when you're with us, hopefully you find a nugget or two that helps your cause.